Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me on this special edition of Bang the Book Radio for June 21st. We're going to talk about this weekend's UFC Fight Night 154 card with Christian Pina of the Sports Gambling Podcast. If you missed either edition of the Bettors Box this week, make sure you head back and check those out on our Bang the Book YouTube page over at bangthebook.com or on Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever it is you listen to our podcast content. Over at the website, Christian's got a preview for us of this UFC on ESPN Plus 12 card. Moicano and Korean Zombie, the main event here for this one. We also have all 32 NFL season win totals previewed over at the website, so make sure you check those out. To go along with MLB, soccer, golf, NASCAR, tennis, you name it, we've got it over there at bangthebook.com. All right, we'll bring on this one and only guest for this Friday edition of the show. That is Christian Pina of the Sports Gambling Podcast. Christian, how's it going today, man?
Good, man. We had a nice little week break. Didn't get to talk to you, but the last UFC event was really well, man. I mean, we had Wineland out there. Ferguson is kind of the two top plays. Everything went, you know, kind of according to plan, and it's really nice when a plan comes together, as they say. So this card is a little bit different. This is definitely not one of my favorite betting cards in a long time. That is for sure. But there's always something to be gained from getting, you know, real, whether it's scouting or whatever it is to take away from a card, always something to be gained. But this card certainly does not have the type of fights I usually look for, like the last UFC event when it comes to a betting perspective.
Well, and as we look back at that UFC 238 card, as you mentioned, you know, a couple of the plays that we talked about here on the show coming through very nicely. Let's talk about the two title fights, though, real quickly and just sort of cycle back to those. Look, I'm not a big UFC fan. I don't watch a whole lot of UFC, but I would be surprised if there's a knockout as violent in the women's division as that one that Jessica Eye suffered anytime soon.
Yeah, man. Look, that's, you know, as we broke down that fight, you know, on this show, I kind of talked about that, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if I came out there with the kill or be killed mentality. And I think that is what she did. I talked about how I thought there was one of two ways that fight could have gone. And it was she could use it as the best, you know, kind of sparring, 25 minutes of her life and really just try to survive. Or she could go out there and go kill or be killed because she knows that over a 25-minute fight, there is no way that she could match skill with Shevchenko. And that's not a knock on Jessica Eye. There's nobody in that division that can at this point. She is the Ronda Rousey of that division in my estimation because nobody on the planet is on her level at that weight class. And that's what she did. And she went out there and it was kill or be killed. And for lack of a better term, she, you know, got killed. And it was really kind of an eye-opening experience. I give all the credit in the world to Jessica Eye for, you know, going out there and saying, I can't match this. This is my only path and let's see what happens. You know, from a fan perspective, you know, that is what, you know, casual UFC fans want to see. You never like to see somebody be hurt and on the mat lifeless like that for so long. But you know, that is the warrior mentality that, you know, so many people respect, including myself, of going out there and giving your, you know, mind, body, and soul to this sport. So a vicious knockout, and you can kind of take away from that what you will, but all the props in the world to Jessica Eye and, of course, for, you know, Shevchenko for doing what needed to be done in that situation.
I guess before we get to Henry Cejudo, since we're on the subject of eyes, not a real great outcome there for Donald Cerrone either.
Yeah, and again, and I'm not sitting here trying to toot my own horn or anything, but that is, you know, that to me is the line in the sand of who Donald Cerrone is. We know who he is. He is 0-100 against pressure fighters. And you're talking about probably, in my estimation, the greatest pressure fighter in the game, along with Khabib Nurmagomedov, in Tony Ferguson. It was a nightmare stylistic matchup. And we've seen this movie play out so many times that, you know, this is who Cerrone, nobody will beat he's the ultimate gatekeeper of the even top five. But once you get to the brightest lights and the best of the best, that is who Cerrone loses to. And I just think that is who he is. That's who he's always will be. So you can kind of, I won't say pigeonhole, but you can kind of see that, you know, narrative playing out before the fight even starts with a guy like Cerrone. And it was the body kicks. It was everything that was his kryptonite when he left this division in weight class. So it makes a lot of sense that the fight, you know, was that outcome for sure. But, you know, again, that is who Cerrone is. He's going to go out there. He's going to put on a show and he's going to give everything to the sport.
Well, and Henry Cejudo, I mean, huge win for him. Double champ. You got to give him a lot of credit for that. I don't know if either one of us sort of expected him to look as good as he did, but hey, full marks to him.
Yeah, that is, you know, we were talking about that in the past. It's when you look at, you know, champs, it's the elite of the elite of the world. It's, you know, Daniel Cormier, Conor McGregor. It's these guys that, you know, are, you know, have the whole package of marketability and this and that. And, you know, Cejudo largely, you know, I don't think a lot of people, including myself, ever expected that type of aspirations for him. You know, Moraes was, to me, I didn't think, you know, Moraes was the finisher in talking about paths to victories. But when you look at Cejudo, I mean, at this point, I don't know. I mean, after, you know, dethroning Mighty Mouse, getting him out of the UFC in a trade, this is, you have to look at it. I know it's very different weight classes that, you know, Cejudo has done this in, then a Cormier, then a McGregor. But a champ is nothing to ever take anything away from, regardless of the weight class. And you have to start looking at him as the, you know, pinnacle of the elite pound for pound now.
All right, so as we transition over to this Fight Night 154 event or UFC on ESPN Plus 12, UFC Greenville, whatever the hell you want to call it here, first visit down to the state of South Carolina. So you expecting anything with the judging here in this one?
No, not really, man. Expect the same things you saw out of the Florida cards, the St. Pete, the Miamis of the world. It's, I don't think that, you know, South Carolina is going to favor a gritty, you know, Southern style versus a, you know, point fighting or anything like that. This, when it goes kind of state by state inside the U.S., maybe outside of, you know, New York, and this was kind of when the new rules were in place, where they weren't, this is depending on that. At this point, when you go state by state, there's not a lot of difference, so I wouldn't expect anything kind of, you know, unique about, you know, the Carolina judging at all.
All right, so as we look at this card here, you know, as you mentioned at the top of the show, not one of the strongest cards from a betting standpoint or really from a watchability standpoint, but we still have plenty of things to talk about here with it, beginning with the main event between Moicano and the Korean Zombie. And right now you've got Moicano, little more than a $2 favorite, minus 210 out there, kind of the prevailing number. What do you think about the line and what do you think about the matchup?
Yeah, it's a fair line. This is, you know, this was basically the same line from Moicano versus Aldo. And I thought that would be kind of a changing of the guard, and it wasn't. And, you know, Moicano coming off just the second loss of his career. But you have to look at who he lost to, and it was the elite of the elite. It was Ortega at the time with a late guillotine. And then, you know, so I go back and forth on this fight. I do understand the line. But it's a little bit steep for my, you know, taste. And when you look at Korean Zombie, I mean, this is going to be probably everyone's, you know, favorite fight of the night. It's the reason why it is the main event. You know, when you look at Korean Zombie going up against, you know, a guy like Yair Rodriguez, it was a stand up back and forth battle, and just got caught. So both guys are kind of very hungry for a win. I think that Moicano certainly has the closer path to title aspirations, you know, being at the number five versus, you know, coming in at number 12. So this is going to be a back and forth kind of war, in my estimation, on the feet. I don't expect much ground, much, you know, wrestling, technical stuff like that. Although Korean Zombie definitely does have, you know, the grappling advantage. So it's going to be a back and forth one. It's one that I understand the line. But to me, you know, while I would favor Moicano, it's a dog or pass perspective just because of the price. I wouldn't go about parlaying Moicano. It's just, this is a really tough one, but I do understand it, and I would kind of hang the same line, and I do favor Moicano to get back on track here. Just the younger, you know, kind of hungrier fighter that has the title aspirations within his grasp, while Korean Zombie, while, you know, exciting and fans will always love him and gravitate towards him, has a lot more to prove and a long way to go.
Well, and as you look at Korean Zombie here, only his third fight really since 2013, kind of took a little bit of a hiatus from the sport there. For Moicano, usually a twice a year type of fighter. He's been that way over the last 3 years. This will be his second fight in 2019. We'll see if he adds a third one later on in the year. But what about that? You know, the fact that Korean Zombie just, you know, three fights essentially in the last 6 years, three fights dating back to February 4th, Does that matter to you? I mean, do you sort of worry about his ability to stay sharp?
Yeah, it's a unique situation with him because he wasn't really just taking time off. He, you know, the Korean, they have mandatory military service. And so he was in the military for Korea for so long. And that's, you know, a huge part of his inactivity. That being said, it's not the same as somebody being on the couch, eating potato chips and you know, doing their thing while being inactive. He was certainly staying in shape. I'm sure he was still training on the side. And he's a guy that is made for these five round wars. He has the, you know, more polished technique and power, and he can come back from, you know, losing fights prior to that with that power. So it's a little bit of a different situation. So for me, I look at the reasoning for inactivity. You look at a guy like, you know, Tony Ferguson, it was injury. So that's a question mark. You look at a guy like Korean Zombie, while he did have some injury problems, it, you know, the mainstay of his hiatus was military service. So it's just a very different dynamic when you talk about the type of inactivity. So I don't really, you know, put it into play that much for a guy like Korean Zombie, and that is the reason, is he was still, you know, staying sharp, still polishing his craft, while if you look at the other sides, there's just more question marks when it comes to inactivity.
All right, so we move to the bantamweight division here. John Lineker, Rob Font, and this was originally supposed to be Corey Stamann in this fight, but it's Lineker now as an injury replacement. These two fought once before UFC 198, so this isn't a scheduled rematch or anything like that. It's just kind of how things fell into place. And Lineker is over a $2 favorite here, minus 215. How about this line and matchup?
Yeah, it's really the same thing as Moicano. I lean with the you know, $2 favorite, of course, but it's just a little bit too, you know, it's a fair line, and it's one you got to pay for, right, if you want to back Lineker. Look, you're not going to get me betting against Johnny Hands of Stone Lineker anytime soon. I just think that he is basically a $2 better version of Rob Font. And, you know, I am a huge Rob Font guy. He's a fellow Boston guy growing up in Woburn, Massachusetts. But it's just, when you look at this stylistically, everything that Rob Font does, John Lineker does better with more power and faster. And when you're talking about, you know, this 135 pound weight class, there was not a lot of guys with finishing power, but then except Lineker, 14 knockouts is incredible to go along with 4 submissions. And of course the 12 decisions. You look at the other side with Font. He is, you know, he's a point fighter. He is a decision machine. He does have 7 knockouts in his 16 UFC wins, but those were very much largely, you know, in the early stages of his MMA career. And he's been a guy that gets to the judges' scorecards. And at that time, he was able to kind of, you know, out volume guys and just do their game better at this weight class. That is Lineker. You know, when you look at this, everything Font wants to do, Lineker does bigger, faster, stronger. That is the case here, and that is why the, you know, the price is what it is. You know, Font does have a little bit of a reach advantage, about 4 inches, but I just don't, you know, Lineker just has more paths to victory. Certainly the knockout, certainly the decision, and certainly submission. In my estimation, Font has to kind of out-volume Lineker while watching out for that power that not many in this weight class possess at all. So, look, I think that Lineker has the better fight IQ. He'll be more prepared for that kind of game and maybe, you know, a little more tentative than usual. But Lineker is just going to do everything Font wants to do better, in my opinion here.
All right, except for the Yoder Kondo fight, which we'll talk about here in a minute, a lot of $2 and $3 favorites on the main card and really on the card in general. Barbarena minus 270, Lee minus 200, Holland minus 225. Anything on those three fights to where, you know, you could see yourself taking one side or the other?
Yeah, like you said, the prices aren't great on this card, and it's one reason, you know, if I always try to, when I start my handicap, I really don't even look at the prices. You know, certainly when they open, I'm going to go try to take a soft opener or something like that. But largely, you know, prior to that, I try to look at every fight as they pick. And UFC matchmakers have famously said when they put together cards, I don't know if I really believe this, but their whole goal is to make every fight a, you know, minus 110 fight. And, you know, certainly there are showcases that go against every single thing that is said. But when you look at this, I really do agree with a lot of them. And what I say about, you know, you look at Barbarina, he is a guy you want, you know, to put your money behind. He's going to give you everything he has, and you really can't put, you know, you can't ask for more, right? So Barbarina is constant pressure. He's constant offense, and Randy Brown is a younger guy on the come up that may not know how to deal with that. So I agree with that one. You look at De La Rosa, you look at Andrea Lee, same thing, minus 210. You know, again, I agree with it. I just don't know that I'm in the business of laying minus 220 in a UFC fight. So it's a little bit of a weird situation for sure. Holland Dietrich certainly falls into that camp as well at the minus 235. There's nothing there, you know, when you're talking about trying to get an edge and beat a number and hang your own to see what's different. There's not a lot of differences here. They are where they should be. And if they fought 100 times, the odds would probably come out to what those implied probabilities are. So I don't see myself making any play on either Barbarina or Brown at the plus money, Andrea Lee, De La Rosa, Chirico, or Holland as well. I just don't find, you know, quote unquote value is certainly a thing there, and I just don't really see it on any of those. The one thing I would say, the closest I would have would be Andrea Lee. You know, she is somebody that is, when you look at her fights, her big, she's a kickboxer by trade. She has done everything there is to do in that sport. But she had issues with, you know, her takedown defense. And the issue for her stylistically here is De La Rosa is a takedown artist. And if she gets it to the mat, I don't see her being able to get back up. But if she continues to make these improvements we have seen from her in her last fights, Andrea Lee is somebody that I think probably is the most warranting of that fight and the closest that I would come to laying that. But there is just that question mark of if she is going to be able to continue improve and if she regresses at all, De La Rosa would, you know, obviously have the path to victory at the big underdog price. So all of those are kind of a stay away.
All right, now you do have a couple of fights that you like, and we'll get to those in a second, but something you just kind of mentioned there, and something I want to talk about, is that even if you don't have any action on these, at least you can do some scouting for some future fights. You can certainly have keys to the fight, so to speak, that you want to look for. So even though you may not have action on these five fights on this main card, what are you looking for? Are there certain boxes that you want to see these fighters check so that you can keep them in the back of your mind going forward?
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? It's kind of how, you know, athletes watch tape, and it's the same thing when you're trying to scout UFC, you know, people. That is really the case. On the main card here, again, like I talked about, is somebody making improvements on their takedown defense? Are they making improvements striking? Are they transitioning their game like a guy like you've seen, you know, Mike Perry go from a knockout artist solely all the way up to a, you know, kind of dirty boxing, mixed martial arts style, and you know, making changes. And you've seen the kind of games of people. Willis comes to mind. You know what you're going to get from a guy like Justin Gaethje, but when you see these changes, can Francis Ngannou, so be one that's upcoming, is he making improvements in the wrestling after the embarrassment to Stipe? You know, those type of things certainly come into it. I think it's going to be more applied on the prelims, truthfully, in this one, just because I think that we know what to expect. There's not a lot, you know, Barbarina is going to come forward with pressure. That's not going to change in his game. What you look for is, can Randy Brown handle that? And maybe you look for that, you know, if he goes up against a pressure offense guy next time. Andrea Lee, as I just talked about, is she making improvements in her takedown defense, or is De La Rosa just going to have, you know, her way with her on the mat? And you know who Andrea Lee is. DiCirico Holland, you know, you can kind of go through this, but to me, it's more prevalent on the main cards just when we apply it to this fight or this fight card exclusively. You look at a guy like Rozenstruik against Alan Crowder, you know, Rozenstruik getting taken down by Junior Albini is a big, big red flag to me. So has he made improvements in that area, or has he not? Can he kind of fix that hole in his game? So that's something that, you know, I'm going to look to apply to this card specifically with that fight in mind. But you can certainly, you know, you just want to see who's improving and what areas you find them weak in, for sure.
All right, so we'll circle back to this Yoder and Kondo fight, because it's the only one on the main card that, you know, has a pretty reasonable line here. Yoder minus 120 favorite. I'm sure some places maybe minus 115, minus 125 in that type of range. But at least this one looks pretty close, and it looks like it doesn't have, you know, a potentially predetermined outcome as these, you know, $2 favorite fights do. So what about this one in the strawweight division? Do you feel like there's an edge there?
Yeah, a little bit. Look, you look at a girl like Ashley Yoder, and I'm going to be very honest, I don't think she belongs in the UFC. I think she lost her last fight with Amanda Cooper. That would have been her fourth straight loss, and UFC probably would have shown her the door, to be honest. You look at Kondo, and while she isn't, you know, doing anything special, her, you know, at least her losses are against better competition, and she has beaten the caliber of fighter that Yoder has lost to. Would I call this a coin flip fight? No, I think that Kondo is a little bit deserving of a much more, a little bit more respect in the betting market. And again, this is not really, I can sit here and I can try to polish this picker, this play on Kondo up a little bit from her perspective, but this is just a long-term fade of a girl I don't think belongs at this level, who does nothing good. Everything is really below average against Ashley Yoder. And I just think that Kondo, while again, it's nothing special, this is a matchup that is going to take place on the feet. And that is where Kondo excels. And so she, you know, long and lanky is words that we're used to be kind of describing of Yoder. I mean, her nickname, the Spider Monkey, kind of speaks to that. Neither one of them is consistent, I would say. But to me, this is just going a long-term fade until she is shown the door of a girl who doesn't belong at this level right now in Yoder. So I certainly would favor Kondo at about the plus 100, plus 105 lines I'm seeing around town right now.
All right. So what about on the prelim card? Is there anything that you do like that, you know, will classify as a pick for you this weekend?
Yeah, there's a couple things I can go over here. Again, it's a little bit hard because you're looking at minus 280 with Lipsky. You're looking at Darren Wynn at minus 300. Let's talk about Wynn for a second against Eric Spicely. Darren Wynn is Daniel Cormier's, dare I say, protege. And this is really a great style matchup for him. You know, Eric Spicely is pretty much below average in every category except grappling. And so when you're talking about a guy like Darren Wynn, who trains with Cormier day in, day out, you know, what is his strength inevitably going to be? It's going to be takedown defense. When you spar with DC all day, you're going to get pretty good at trying to stuff that. So the one area that Spicely excels at a little bit, you know, should be the strength defensively for a guy like Wynn. And on the feet, this one isn't close. Darren Wynn is not Daniel Cormier 2.0 on the feet. He is much, much better. So that minus 300 line, I think, is certainly warranted. Would look for early knockout from Wynn at the minus 300. But again, these prices are just really, really kind of out there when you're talking about, you know, trying to make a case for the dogs. There is one on the prelims, Dan Ninja at plus 130 against Kevin Aguilar, minus 150. Would certainly lean with the underdog there. Stylistically, this is just bad, bad, bad for the favorite in Aguilar. He has no takedown defense to speak of. Inge has great wrestling, all the ground and pound in the world, and it's really kind of that simple. I would certainly flip this line if I were the one to have made it. I think that Inge, you know, just is going to get this fight to the ground. He's going to be able to keep top position for 15 minutes and win a very comfortable decision. Or he's going to finish it with ground and pound along the way. So that is the one that really kind of stuck out to me. But other than that, I hate to sound kind of square here, but I really do kind of favor all the chalk and kind of agree with it. But those are the two that really stuck out to me when it comes to the prelim fights. But there's just truthfully not a lot to go on betting wise for this card.
Now, I could have misheard you, but I feel like when we were talking just before we hit record here, there was something about Matt Wyman that you were kind of intrigued about in his fight. Maybe not necessarily to the point of betting him, but I think you did mention him. So was there anything you wanted to add about that fight against Luis Pena?
Yeah, it's really interesting when we talk about Wyman. Look, Pena has a 5-inch reach advantage, and as style, you know, stylistic matchups go, styles make fights is kind of the day one stuff. This is a bad, bad style matchup for him. Wyman has great wrestling, elite, elite, elite submission defense in all of the ground and pound in the world. Here's the problem, though. He's coming off a 5-year layoff, and that is a tall task to, you know, shake rust off and be okay right away for a guy like Wyman. If this was, you know, the pre-break version of Wyman, I think that this line would almost be the exact opposite. And so this fight is, there's just a lot of questions here, but if you just go by the film and you just go by the past versions of these two fighters, you're certainly going to, you know, favor Wyman when you look at the two stylistic matchups, because it's just a nightmare for a guy like Luis Pena. The problem is, like I said, it's a 5-year layoff, and that is a type of layoff that is something I certainly do take into account much more than the layoff of a guy like Korean Zombie. So there's just certainly questions there that I don't know that I want to, you know, would lay that price on the favorite certainly, but I don't know how, you know, enticing that dog money is when you're talking about something like that with a 5-year layoff. But again, if you look at just the film, you take the layoff off of it, that is something to me that certainly did stick out. And the pre, you know, hiatus version of Matt Wyman would be a nightmare for Pena. And so that is the reason I would take maybe a small stab on that big plus money underdog at plus 320 with Matt Wyman.
Well, and I guess the last point to make here, then, you know, we talk about scouting and we talk about still having some sort of equity in these fights that you're not betting in hopes that, you know, you can do something in their next fight or the fight after that. I would presume that Wyman, you know, I don't know this for sure, but I would presume he probably signed a 3-fight deal, right? So you may get two more cracks at him after you see how he looks in this one.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's, you know, there's two schools of thought. One is if you want to take that small stab at this point in time, you are getting, you know, kind of the bottom of the market on a guy like Wyman. And so, you know, if he goes out there and just styles on him, and you're going to see that price drop. And so you can either kind of take your shot when the market is at its lowest, or you can kind of wait and maybe you're going to take the worst of it, but at least you have in the back of your mind some confidence in that play and everything like that. So there are two schools of thought. You're certainly probably not going to get a better number on a guy like Wyman at this point, especially if he does come out here and, you know, if he wins you a plus 320, it certainly makes all the, you know, it makes it worth it for sure. But it's just, you know, the standard for my money when you're in this professionally is a little bit higher. But certainly it does make some sense to buy at the bottom of the market on a guy like Wyman, because again, when you look at the film, it's a hard, hard ask for a guy like Luis Peña stylistically when you look at everything that is his disadvantage is Wyman's advantage stylistically. So two schools of thought there. I just, you know, the long-term view in the standard I have is just a little bit higher, but could not fault anyone for going in there first rather than waiting.
Once again, make sure you check out Christian Pina's preview over at bangthebook.com for this Fight Night 154 event. We've got another event next week, UFC on ESPN3. Francis Ngannou, Junior Dos Santos, should be a real good main event there for us to talk about next week. Make sure you follow Christian on Twitter, at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A. Christian, appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much, brother, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, buddy. Take care and enjoy the fights.
There you go. That's Christian Pina once again on Twitter, at Christian Pina, P-I-N-A, the host of the Sports Gambling Podcast. On Monday, we'll have a new edition of the Bettors Box here on Bang the Book Radio, so make sure you keep your ears open for that. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.